Hi, and welcome to this podcast. My name is Greg Marshall, and I'm the Vice President of Global Programs for the Flight Safety Foundation. Today, I'll be speaking with Andy Evans, who is very well known within the commercial rotary wing community with respect to airworthiness and safety. Andy is also the Director of Aero Assurance, a respected aviation consultancy business. Welcome, Andy.
Hi there, Greg.
Our International Air Safety Summit will be held in Dubai between the 14th and 16th of November. And Andy, you'll be delivering a presentation on the second day during our dedicated maintenance stream. Can you tell me why you think attention on maintenance human factors has over-focused on maintainers?
Over the last 10, 15 years, the emphasis has been heavily on human factors training for people involved in maintenance and in reporting, safety reporting. So everyone now who goes for a license will do human factors as part of their license. Everyone involved in maintenance has to do an initial human factors course. And then every 2 years, continuation training in human factors. Everyone's being encouraged to report when they make errors or they discover errors. And that's all great. But what we're not really doing is starting by eliminating the errors before people have the chance to have them. And that comes by being a lot more proactive in the design of our maintenance procedures, our maintenance facilities, and above all, the human-centered design of aircraft equipment. Now, clearly, we can't go back and redesign every aircraft, but we're still dealing with certification requirements that stretch back to the mid-1960s without change. Flying controls are a classic example. There, the requirement simply says that they should be sort of resistant to being misassembled or distinctively and permanently marked. And in many cases, it's difficult to even see the flying controls meet either requirement because they can be so easily misrigged and so on. Now, these things can be caught with independent inspections, but the design is a latent error waiting to happen, if you see what I mean. Hmm. And there's a lot more the industry can do in that area.
Okay. You're also critical of over-reliance on classroom maintenance human factors training. Why is that?
Well, particularly, again, if you look at the European perspective, we've introduced all these requirements for human factors training. And although some trainers do very sophisticated interactive sessions, which get over a lot of information and help people develop some of the skills they need, a lot of the training is still very heavily deaf by PowerPoint. And in many ways, it's a classic of a regulation imposing a solution, but possibly not achieving the real end goal that we need. There's a theory, and it is only a theory, it's not meant to be a very prescriptive ratio, but there's a theory that most learning happens actually in the workplace, 70%. 20% is what so termed social learning, where people learn from their peers, their colleagues in mentoring and coaching. And only actually 10% comes from formal classroom style training. But actually on this, that's what we've insisted people do. And they leave, go back to the workplace, and if it's not set up to encourage the rest of the learning, we've actually lost the big opportunity in the first place. Coupled with, there's been assessments in the past that typically 50% of all classroom training is never actually used. It's what they call scrap learning. Mm. And I can't help thinking in the human factors world, ironically, we're suffering from that.
Mm. Very interesting. Tell me about safety reporting. Is safety reporting a good indicator of the safety culture in a maintenance organisation?
Well, it can be. Clearly, the more people report is an indication that people trust their management. But it really comes down to what people are reporting to start with. You know, I've seen some reporting schemes where they're packed with trivia, but you know, it's mostly about something is wrong, you know, the facility or the environment. A little bit perhaps of someone else did something, but the real indication there is, are people actually self-reporting things that people wouldn't otherwise know about? So they're exposing themselves, making themselves a little vulnerable. But even then, the quantity of reporting doesn't necessarily mean that the safety culture is good. It may be that people are just reporting the same things over and over and over, and they're not getting fixed. That's why I think, if anything, it's more important to really look at how an organization is improving the things they can improve. If they're putting improvements in, that's a far more powerful sign than having a database of, want of a better expression, complaints that they're sort of analyzing regularly but not necessarily acting upon.
Good point. So here's another one, a very good one. How do you know if you have a just culture?
Well, of course, this is one of the ultimate buzzwords in the industry. And it's quite odd that some organisations are very keen on trying to measure this by assessing the quality of their policies and procedures and how prominently visible they are and so on. And do they have a good decision tree to take when someone reports and possibly may have made a violation or so on? But in practice, I think, again, it comes back to, do your employees actually trust you as an organization? Are they being open because they know you will take their report for what it is? An attempt to help and an attempt to improve, or will it be taken as an admission of guilt, a confession, you know, and that they are going to be the ones subject to investigation rather than the problem that they've reported, if you see what I mean?
What do you think is more important to focus on here? Do you think it's on safety leadership or safety culture?
Culture, again, is another key buzzword at the moment. But by definition, cultures are very difficult to measure. So some people say that they have ways of doing it. It's interesting, one of the gurus and founders of the sort of field of organizational culture, Ed Schein, actually says you can't measure culture. Almost don't bother trying. You can try to understand it, but you can't measure it. And there are ways to understand culture, and a number of them are very worthwhile doing. But really, culture is an outcome, you know, although it's a bit of an odd outcome because it's also an input of all things. So your culture influences what happens in your organisation, and what happens in your organisation influences the culture. It's a sort of a slightly circular arrangement. But actually, if you want to really influence your culture, you have to influence what's happening in your organization. And the best way of doing that, I think, is by good safety leadership. That's something you can control, is something you can measure probably more easily. And if you do that well, and the organization, I'd say, behaves well, effectively in terms of safety performance and how people act and what they think is normal and acceptable, then that will hopefully reinforce the right aspects of your culture.
Very interesting and all very good points, Andy. Look, thanks very much for being a part of our podcast today.
No problem. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, and we'll be uploading more of these as they become available. If you have any suggestions for a topic of interest for a podcast, please let me know. And you can do so via email at marshall@flightsafety.org. Until next time.